Do not adjust your radio dial. You are tuned in to the Mark Order Podcast. Join the Mark Order.
Hello, hello. It is Wednesday night, so you know what that means. A hard cut of the music by Ryan, because that's forever his gimmick. It is the Mark Order Podcast. We are not here every Wednesday lately, but we are here most Wednesdays still. I will claim that. It is me, Ryan, joined as mostly always my co-host, Joe. How you doing, Joe?
Good, Ryan. How are you?
Not too bad. Eventually, we'll get our third back when her lungs rebuild, I'm guessing. I don't know. Maybe. Yeah. I don't feel bad. She hasn't rejoined Alex on his Monday Night Sour stream yet. So we haven't been. Yeah, she's abandoning two of us. So, and he is a puppet. So, like, I figure she'd be more inclined to join the puppet.
That's fair. That's a fair assumption.
So how's life been? Good for you?
Yeah, just been busy. I know I've been gone for a few weeks, but as you can tell, my office is a little bit bare bones from what it used to be because I moved to a new house. And so here I am finally, and hopefully I'll be a little bit more regular on the show.
Will you paint a mural of me in the background?
Do you think we can commission Mel to do that for us?
Directly on the wall, no, but I guarantee I could get a painting, and I don't think either one of us won't be spending money on that.
Oh, I don't know. How committed are you to the bit?
I mean, listen, she'd paint me like a Greek god. So, like, I wouldn't necessarily. You see what the way she paints Don Callis and him. I wouldn't complain. Suddenly I'd have abs. It would be beautiful. But yeah, really fool everyone. They think that's who I am until they see me. And that's the joke.
Well, maybe that's Christmas. How are you? What's going on with you? What's been this?
Let me think. Well, I wasn't here last week. I forget why. Oh, no, actually, don't forget why I'll go over that. But not a lot. We were had a plug-o fill in 1 week for us. And then there's, you know, Thanksgiving holiday and all that fun. So that stopped us. And then last week, I did want to be part of it. But I got a nasty cold and voice was in and out for a little bit. So didn't feel like it made sense to be on a podcast with, you know, not a great voice, which is also when we plug stuff at the end. I don't have an episode of my history podcast coming out this week because I usually record like weekend and stuff. And again, wasn't really there. It was, you'd get a couple seconds out of me and then it'd be gone. So, you know, but otherwise I'm good. That's gone now and I can talk and that's always fun. Big G pointing out no Kate tonight. We will get her back someday. You know, I actually think she posted recently. She's seeing improvements. So she does expect her schedule to, maybe we'll get her back on a more, I don't say regular, that's not sporadic basis. Instead of just being gone, we'll get her back a little more sporadically and then as her lungs rebuild. I'm trying to convince her that podcasting about wrestling helps rebuild the lungs.
That's what I've heard.
Yeah, some people go running, they lift weights. No, podcasting, it's in and out, in and out, in and out.
Mm-hmm. It's endurance. You have to like break the muscle down to rebuild it, right?
Exactly. But we are joined in the chat. We got Pieces, Big G, Taylor Cannon stopping in. We appreciate you guys checking us out. We know, like I said, we warned you, but even still, our sporadic nature has been crazy. But we hopefully in the next coming months, I mean, holidays are going to screw stuff up. But after the holidays, hopefully we get a little more regular and it's new year, new us. And by new us, it means old us just back. I don't plan on changing.
I just want you regular, Ryan. As long as you're regular, I'm happy.
Well, yeah, you know, there's fiber drinks, there's brand cereal, there's that yogurt that Jamie Lee Curtis sells. Uh-huh. That's how you get regular, Joe. That's how you get regular.
I'm looking forward to AEW being back in my backyard and on New Year's Eve.
Oh, are they really?
Yeah, they'll be about a mile away from me.
Are they? New Year's Eve is a Wednesday, so they would actually be recording.
Yep, that's a live show.
Oh, that's a. I'm trying to think if that's a good thing or a bad thing.
We'll find out.
I mean, I guess for the wrestlers, like, it kind of sucks, but at the same point, you know, and then for me, the viewer, I don't have a life. So, yeah, that'll work for me.
Same. I don't go out.
Yeah, but for people in, like, your backyard, it's tough because, like, all right, do you want to go to, if you want to go to the show, but you are kind of surrendering the early portion of your New Year's Eve. If not your entire, now, if I ask you.
Yes.
Do they record Collision as well and then do a special midnight countdown at the taping?
Oh.
That could be kind of fun.
That would be fun.
Yeah, you never seen that before, and you know, just throwing out ideas. And then you have and they're not by you, but you have Christmas Eve Dynamite, which I will not be watching. We have a giant family party that night, and then you have Christmas Day Collision, which I may or may not be able to watch. So crazy, you know, holiday planning on there. But I get it. What other choice do they have? You know, your show's on Wednesday. I'm just trying to speak with. Though I'm actually a little surprised they're doing a. They lost the NBA.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, my head was going. I'm surprised they're doing a Christmas Collision because that's Big Basketball Day, but TNT lost the NBA.
Hmm.
Sorry, this is me processing things in real time as to why, you know, why would you do that? But, you know, because Christmas is, well, now there's football on it too, but used to be that was the NBA's day. Football had Thanksgiving, NBA had Christmas. Now it's NFL is Christmas. And yet, but now the NFL tries to have every day. I don't know. I'm rambling. So what do you think of tonight's show?
It was fun. I always love this time of year with the C2 where it's just loaded. I feel like the cards are kind of like a little mini pay-per-view. So it went by fast and had a lot of fun matches. So I really enjoyed it. Overall, I mean, it's probably a good 3 3/4 fun for me.
You know, the C2, Scott saying I showed up for my own show. Scott, I've been the one showing up. Let's be fair here.
It's not a competition.
You're not getting shots at you. The C2, I love the C2. I'm not disagreeing. They give you a bunch of great matches that have a quote unquote story or purpose behind them rather than being random, which is why I initially, and for a long time, and I would still love them if they used them right, when they had the rankings, loved it. Because it, as long as you can always say these guys are competing for a specific reason, there's a story there.
You are a man who likes his stakes.
Yeah. Give me multiple. That could be taken multiple ways, and all are accurate. Just like, you know, the C2, you want to win these points, and granted, even with rankings or whatever, the C2 would still hold more significance because of the individual points. Like Kyle Fletcher's story is gonna, we'll get to it. Wouldn't matter as much in rankings as it does in a C2. But when you have, say, a 9 versus an 8, or more specifically, like a 9 versus a 6, you'd be like, that 6 is knocking on the top 5, where he'll get a shot at that title. And if he loses to the not, like, there's a story there that could be really built that they just never utilize properly. But let's start our review with the start of the show, which they open up, and I'm very glad they opened up with it, because you either had to open it or main event, and I just knew they weren't going to main event with it. So I'm glad that they decided to open it, which was the Women's Tag Team Championship final. Babes of Wrath, Harley Cameron and Willow Nightingale versus Timeless Love Bombs, Mina Shirakawa and Toni Storm. Now, one thing I've enjoyed about this whole thing is Babes of Wrath, pretty early on, adopted the tag team moniker and similar gear, and they had the entrance, and it was perfect. Timeless Love Bombs, over time, they got matching gear, a song, a dance. Like, I liked that they actually developed into real teams, so it didn't feel like random teams thrown together for these belts. It mattered. We had a great back and forth battle. I mean, this was a lot of two counts where the third person's coming in, knocking them out. You had big moments from Willow where she got to show her power. Of course, Tony being Tony had her. You thought she was going to win it a couple times because she's just awesome. I think she hit Storm Zero at one point. So I really thought they were, because this could have went either way. I thought that they were going to win when she hit the Storm Zero. Babe, but turns out the Babes of Wrath ended up winning by a Dr. Bomb from Willow Nightingale on Mina Shirakawa, and they became the inaugural AEW's Women World Tag Team Champions. Now, I have two questions for you. One, what'd you think of the match? And two, do you remember who predicted that Babes of Wrath were going to win when this was all announced? Do you remember? Because it's one of us, and I don't think it was you. Oh, it was me.
That doesn't sound right.
I don't often get things right, but I got this one. I knew it.
We might have to go back and check the tape on that. I don't know. That doesn't sound right.
It's been thrown out. It was physical tape, and they threw it out.
Much to the chest point, you couldn't go wrong with whoever won this match. It's kind of fun when you have two face teams going after the inaugural championship. I liked how Willow and Harley became a tag team and kind of grew together. Mina and Tony, why their look and presentation came a little bit later, I felt like they were very natural as a tag team throughout this whole run. The match itself, I thought, was a nice pace where it was kind of playful in the beginning and then kind of like into gear and got a little bit more serious in the middle and to the end. And overall, I think I just really liked how it showed Harley's growth. One, as a wrestler in the ring, and two, her character from going, always trying to fit in somewhere, whether it's QTV in the factory or the Outcast, or trying to become friends with Mercedes. I liked how she had always been trying to find her place, and she finally has, and she found success with it. So I kind of like that little ribbon and bow to kind of cap off her story.
Agreed. That's a great call on how she's developed. I mean, she started as the heel on QT, the standout star of QTV, but the heel who was doing her singing gimmick and all that, and to where she is now. And you could see all the steps along the way, you know, when she tried to hit on Anthony Bowens, to her Mercedes puppet, to being crazy with Soraya, like all that stuff. What I like about the Harley Nightingale team is that Willow is just an amazing hot tag. When Harley actually is a great face in peril. It just makes sense with her character, makes sense who she is. And then she gets to Willow, and Willow's, you know, the power person, and she just comes in and cleans house. It is, I no matter how many times I see it, I have fun watching it. And their personalities do click. Willow being the always happy person that she, and I'm blanking on a simple word that I use, but always happy person that she is. And Harley meshing so well, because that's all Harley wanted, which is someone who was like, hey, this is you when we're together. Yeah, I loved it. Now, like you and the chat said, it could have gone to the Timeless Love Bombs, and that would have been fine because you would have put your inaugural championship on a former world champ who is probably your biggest woman star along with Mercedes. So I could see that being a big deal, but I actually think it's even bigger that they let Babes of Wrath win, because it sets them up as like a real team. Now the key is you got to follow up with an actual division. You can't just, they won and this is it.
And to your point, I like the fact that it went on first. If it wasn't going to be last, it might be first. However, I think I would like it on pay-per-view. I feel like it should have been a pay-per-view moment rather than just a, winter is coming Dynamite.
Yeah, agreed. So then we move on. They did have an after match interview, which we kind of covered here, where they kind of go over their history together and Willow, how happy she was for Harley. We don't really need to go into that much more. It was just a good good post-match interview. We then have a Samoa Joe promo backstage. He basically said he wanted to, that Eddie Kingston was looking for the real Samoa Joe, but he didn't realize that that's who he's facing this whole time and that he was ruthless. Actually, he said ruthless by design, which is a line I love. And that he was going to beat his ass tonight. That pretty standard Samoa Joe promo. I don't know if you have any thoughts on it.
No, I think that's about it. Joe just kind of reaffirming who he is and just kind of talking about Eddie, you know, being the guy that can always come up short.
That is the Eddie Kingston story for the most part. I mean, he did have that quick run with a couple belts, which was awesome and well-deserved. And obviously the injury kind of fucked up his story for a while. So we're going to have to see how that gets fixed. Then we had a Death Riders promo and Moxley saying, like, you know, his back is against the wall, time's running out, but he can still, but he's proven he can still win. He can still pull it out. And basically he's just saying he's going to do it for the Death Riders. And then Garcia stands up and says they wake up every day and they choose to win and you have to take it. We'll mix this in with, I'm going to hold my Garcia thoughts for later, but what did you think of the Moxley portion of the promo?
It didn't do much for me, to be honest with you. It felt like a lot of their promos. I feel like a lot of their promos are make it sound like they're trying to convince themselves who they are instead of actually talking to the other competitors. I feel like it's more Moxley talking to himself, Moxley talking to the Death Riders, trying to be like, hey, we're still in control. We're not losing ground. I'm not losing ground as a leader. I don't know if I should read into the fact that Claudio wasn't there.
Love that.
But
I mean, Claudio being the first Death Rider to beat him is, I think, a big deal, and hopefully they play that up. And we'll get into the Garcia thing because I'm seeing something there too. So there's a lot going on. We then have a match, which I wasn't sure how this match was going to go because it was kind of thrown together because of injury. You had Jungle Man Jack Perry versus Okada for the Continental Classic Gold League. This ended up being incredible. This ended up, you know, being an awesome match. I actually got worried at one point that, I mean, he did a really good job at selling it, but that Jack Perry might have actually hurt himself. It was when he was standing on the top and Okada drop kicked him out. And the way he landed, he grabbed his knee, and I'm like, that was the sell. But I'm also like, that legitimately could have hurt your knee the way that fell. Like, it was an awkward fall. You know, there's Jack Perry had that one where he's running in the corner, he kind of flips off and gets behind him, and it's like really cool, smooth move. I liked it. But at the end of the day, he was facing Okada, and they point out Okada, the greatest tournament wrestler, and Jack Perry wasn't even supposed to be in this tournament. So Okada wins by pinfall with the Rainmaker, so he earned 3 points for a total of 6 now in the tournament. What did you think of the match?
So the match, I thought they did a nice way of telling the story of the match with also helping, I don't want to say protect Jack in the loss, but it gave him reasons why he lost. One is because, like you said, Okada is one of the greatest, if not the greatest, tournament wrestler of all time. Two, you had the spot where he got pushed off the top and had his knee or ankle injured. And three, they kept kind of reinforcing the idea that, you know, this was Jack Perry's first singles match in X amount of months in AEW, right? So they gave him a lot of reasons of why, you know, he was facing an uphill battle. So I like that part of laying out that of the match. I think the match mainly just, all I can think about is biting fingers and biting other fingers, you know, whether it's 5 on the hand or 1 in the pants.
Which we find out, I was going to bring that, we do find out in a little bit that Jack Perry says he bit off more than he could chew, which that's a good compliment to Okada.
Okay, yeah. I mean, you're not Shibata. What are we doing here?
Yeah, I mean, he gave Okada a very good compliment. Before we get into this, I want to point out pieces talking about the Mox thing. It feels like Death Riders just treading water until they eliminate Mox. There is a bit of that, yes, that they are just waiting. I agree. And then Big G pointing out, Jack Perry wasn't even supposed to be here today. Obviously, replaced.
Sorry, go ahead.
This is obviously replaced. I should have said it. He replaced the injured Darby Allin.
I like the fact that there's this whole ringside reporter thing with Renee, by the way. I noticed that like last week or whatever it was on Dynamite when they toss it to her at ringside and she gives a little bit of analysis.
They do it during the Continental Classic, and I love that. It should be more than the Continental Classic. Like, that's the stuff that makes you feel different.
Yeah, it makes it feel like a big-time match, like it's important.
Yeah. They don't have to do it on, yeah, they don't do it on, I get doing it on the Continental Classic because that's big, but you could do it on a title match. You could do it on, like, not every match. You have to spread it out, but I'm with you. I think it's a good idea. After the match, as is usual with anyone part of the Don Callis family, the Don Callis family comes to the ring and they surround
his head looks like one, right?
Yeah, and plus what Jack Perry did. They surround Jack Perry, but Don Callis offers him a spot in the family. You know, come join us. We got money. You can be part of the family. And that's when Jack Perry says, you know, or if you don't, we're going to beat you up, basically. And that's where Jack Perry says, you know what? This will be the second time tonight I bit off more than I could chew, which, again, comment to Okada. And he hits them all with the mic. He hits a couple of them with the microphone. He starts fighting. They outnumber him. Oh, no. Luchasaurus comes out. And I'm glad this went down the way it did, because at first it looked really bad. Luchasaurus comes out and he won't get, they're clearly, there's like six of them in the ring. And he's like, what do I do? But meanwhile, Jack Perry's still getting beat up. So it's like, you're looking like a bad friend. In come the Young Bucks with chairs. And they just annihilate the Don Callis family. And more importantly, they got $1 million. This leads, and I'm going to skip ahead a little bit, but this leads to an interview later with Don Callis saying, hey, that money doesn't belong to you. You know, you're going to try to argue something like possession is 9/10 of the law, which Don Callis had said on commentary earlier that it's the reason he could have the money. So it's funny that he's arguing against it now. But instead, why don't we do a match? Heshisero, Takeshita, and Okada versus, it was Okada, right?
I believe so. I missed that
Heshisero, Takeshita, and Okada versus the Young Bucks, and if they can find themselves a third. Now, clearly, everyone, I think, assumed they were going to find themselves Omega, but before they do that, they go to Luchasaurus, who I guess is back to his non-speaking side of things. I thought that was done, but he won't do it, but he points to Omega's locker room. They knock on the door. Will you join us, Kenny? He said, I won't do it for the money, but I'll do it to beat Don Callis. So we're going to have the Elite versus Heshisero, Takeshita, and Okada, as long as I got that right. What do you think?
I mean, it's quite a reintroduction of the Elite after a few years of them being apart. I'm just wondering, one, if you're Jack Perry in a ring surrounded by seven guys, why not just, like, drop out of the ring really quick? You could, the turnbuckle was right there. You could just, like, drop and roll out really quick, right?
I always have that question. Like, unless someone's behind you to catch you, why are you not just jumping out?
And secondly, Ryan, if you're in Jack Perry's shoes or boots, I guess in this scenario, would you have taken the money and joined the family?
No, I don't trust Don Callis. I don't think I get paid. Yeah. You know.
That's fair. Well, I look forward to the Bucks winning and then using that money for their entrance again.
Yeah. I mean, it's a very clever way to get out of the poor Young Bucks story, which you now have to get out of with them as faces. Because if you stay in it, it doesn't work. That only works when they were heels. So you have to get like, and so that's something I really enjoy. All right. Well, now I got to catch up because I'm all over the place now. Eddie Kingston did an interview. shout out to the 50th anniversary of Terry Funk winning the world title, and that he hopes he can make Terry proud. He doesn't know how many shots he's going to get, but he's going to take this one. And he's not going to let it easy go easy. And Wilson, I won't say this is a standout promo, but Eddie's just very good at this stuff.
Yeah, I like the fact that he acknowledged that he's come up short, and he values the fact that he doesn't know if this will be the last opportunity he gets at the title.
Yeah. All very good stuff. And then we go to the ring. It's a lot of interviews. Tony Schiavone was interviewing Mark, the AEW TNT champion, which I'm still shocked at, Mark Briscoe. Mark Briscoe basically saying, there was a time where people didn't like me, or they didn't believe in me, and they didn't think I could win the belt, but here I am, and all the haters can kiss his ass. But then he addresses that he's going to be defending the title against Daniel Garcia on Saturday. That's when Wheeler Yuta comes to the crowd with Garcia and Marina Shafir. You get some fuck you Yuta chants, which are always funny to me. I love them. But Garcia grabs the mic and basically cuts a promo, but that he's going to beat Briscoe, and he's going to, I think, break his arm, or was his leg. I forget which thing he threatened to break. Oh, broken leg. I'm seeing my notes. Broken leg. And I'm enjoying that they're giving Daniel Garcia, he's not going to win, but I enjoy that they're giving him a chance to have like a moment of shine. I don't want him getting lost in all this because he joined the Death Riders was a sense up, but he was so hot at one point in this year and then cooled off so significantly.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to see him reheat up a bit. So what'd you think? What would you think of this interaction?
It was fine. It didn't wow me. I felt like his promo against Briscoe was kind of like every other person's promo against Briscoe. So that didn't really get to me, but I'm with you. I'm interested to see what they do with Garcia now. Between this, going after the TNT title, the fact that his speaking part in the promo earlier tonight, it'd almost be kind of fun if you wanted to reheat him up, if he's the one to first jump Moxley, and then everyone else like goes with it.
So you and I are kind of operating on a similar wavelength, where I don't know if he's the first one. I kind of wonder if you're going to see a split in the Death Riders a little bit, because I think you're going to have Claudio take the reins, and I think Pac is going to be on his side, and I think Garcia is going to be on his side. I think Yuta is going to be torn, and I think Marina is going to be torn.
Yeah, Yuta's already torn.
Yeah, and I think Yuta like really has like his looks up to Mox as like his mentor. So like that would be a thing that like suddenly he doesn't know what to do when they're going against him. We'll see. Or I'm completely wrong, it's the other way around, but I'm with you that I think Garcia is, I don't know if he might be the first one to attack, but he's going to do it on Claudio's orders. I see him being Claudio's pit bull. Scott George bringing up a good point that Eddie pays no attention to Hook since he turned and wrestled his own match. There does seem to be a good thing that Eddie's just like, all right, Hook turned on me, oh well, I'm going against Samoa Joe. That is kind of funny that that hasn't really materialized into anything more.
Yeah, it's interesting. And I mean, he didn't really, other than like, abandon him, but he didn't attack Eddie, right? So he kind of used Eddie. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know why that, maybe after, now that he's lost to Samoa Joe, he tried to get some revenge and get a win against Hook next.
Yeah, I mean, that's the feud I was hoping that would come out of it. I get the Samoa Joe thing, but I think it's a way to make Hook a little bit, putting him against someone like Eddie who can carry the mic, and then you can have a bit more. It's time to give Hook a bit more something to sink his teeth into. So it'll be interesting to see if they try to go back to it after walking away from it, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
Then we have, I was about to say we have a match, but no. We go backstage real quick, and the Triangle of Madness are beating up two female wrestlers until Chris Statlander comes in and makes a save with looking like a badass, beating them up. They almost get advantage of her, but she gets a chair and evens things out. Really like this because it made Chris Statlander look like a badass. You know, I like when a face is able to chase away the heel sometimes. You know, they don't always let faces do that, so.
Yeah, especially when she's the size of Chris Statlander and she's your world champion, she should be dominant like that.
Yeah. And then we move on to a match that was awesome. I will say this, there was a lot of talking tonight, but a lot of awesome matches. Mm. We had Hangman Adam Page and Shane Swerve Strickland versus the Ops, Shibata, Hobbs. And Hobbs, sorry, Shibata Hobbs. I want to add in Hook, but it was just Shibata and Hobbs. It was a tag team match, a tornado match. So no tags actually needed. Before the match even starts, it's crazy because you have Hangman and Swerve both come from the audience and they have chains around their neck and they just look like badasses. I mean, I tweet out, they look cooler than I will ever look in my life. Like they just, these two really cool guys who walk. And so you have a bunch of brawling outside the match before it even starts. I think Powerhouse got sent through a table at one point. There's at one point, Hangman gets a beer from one of the bartenders and like sits on the bar and drinks it. Like really cool moments. They do eventually get to the ring where the match starts. And then it becomes a bit more of a back and forth match. Again, no tags because it's not it's a tornado tag match. But you see as the match evolves, Swerve and Hangman getting more and more on the same page. Hangman will duck a move and Swerve will hit something. They'll start doing some double teams. Powerhouse actually runs into Shibata at one point, and then they both nail him with a, I guess it's an elbow. But you end up with, you have Hangman hit Shibata with a buckshot, and then Swerve hits the house call and they pin Shibata. So Hangman and Swerve win against the Ops. What did you think of this crazy match?
You know, being a tornado tag match, or basically any kind of AEW tag match is basically a tornado tag match. I feel like it was the right call for this with the people involved, with Hangman and Swerve. I love the fact that they started out in the crowd and separate, so we didn't have to deal with the, will they coexist part of the match until later on. So I like the fact that they kind of like went their own way in the beginning and kind of each had Hobbs, each had Shibata. And I was really pleasantly surprised how well they kept Hangman and Swerve working together in the match. I don't know. It was just a fun match to watch them do their thing. You knew the outcome. And so I'm going to see how they go next.
Yeah, I mean, it would have been crazy to have them lose. So you knew the outcome, especially because, yes, the Ops have titles, but they have trios titles. They don't have tags. So they can afford this loss, and it doesn't really like hurt whatever stories they want to tell in the trios. But I'm with you. I like the way they work together. I like that it seemed to develop over time. You know, they started away from each other on two total opposite, not two opposite ends, but far apart in their fights. And then the match brought them together, and then all of a sudden, they're the ones hitting the double moves.
Right.
And it's looking, and then they had that stare down at one point where they both looked at each other with like hate in their eyes, but then they turned to Hobbs, just so cool. Go to commercial. We did a Callis promo. We talked about that. You have Stokely cut a promo. Stokely's good at these. You know, he says the most dangerous narcotic on the street is a lie. The dangerous narcotic on the street is not the most dangerous. It's the greatest narcotic is being in front of the camera, because it people it creates an addiction where people think they belong in camera. Basically, he's saying Austin Gunn and Juice Robinson don't belong on camera, don't belong in a match with FTR, and FTR is going to beat them and cure them of their addiction. I think Stokely really does well. Like, he does help FTR out in these, because I think FTR, they're good at promos, but I think Stokely's even better. I don't know if you have any thoughts or.
No, I think, I didn't think that FCR needed a manager, but Stokely had that nice addition, and he's that's what he's great at. He can propel people, whether you're a younger talent who needs a mouthpiece or, elevate a tag team, what a seasoned tag team. I mean, he can do a lot of things for you. And I like the fact that it's a more serious promo, not necessarily his ha-ha funny ones.
Yeah. Then we go to what I think for most people will be considered the match of the night. It's a Continental Classic match. It is Speedball Mike Bailey versus Kyle Fletcher. Dear God, did these two go at it. I mean, if you wanted technical, there was parts of that. If you want high flying, there's parts of that. If you wanted strikes, well, of course, there was that. They did a bit of everything. At one point, they were like almost having like a kick competition, which was fun. You would expect Mike Bailey to win that, but actually Kyle Fletcher got a nice boot to Mike Bailey's face. I saw someone tweet to Mike Bailey, he's really pushing the boundaries of what knee pads can do because he flipped off the ring to the ground and landed on his knees because that's his move. And I was like, gee, like how are your knees functioning? That has to like, it was just brutal. And it started fast and just kept getting faster. I don't know how they kept up the speed with very little breaks. I mean, you had all these, you had a shooting star press. Obviously, you had a bunch of kicks. I'm trying to think. I'm blanking. I'm trying to, like, I don't know the names of things, so I'm trying to see how I described them. Get some really cool kicks. I just assumed Kyle was going to win. I mean, it's been his story, but I guess it makes things a little more interesting. Oh, yeah, pieces were the great things. There was the slam on the guardrail, too. Speedball that looked gnarly. That looked bad, but in a good way. Like, it was just crazy. Speedball won with a rolling sunset flip. I was shocked at the outcome, and I love the match. Where are you at with this?
Oh, I couldn't agree more. I think I really thought it was going to go to a time limit draw. The longer it went, I'm like, oh, it's going to be a draw. Like, I didn't think Bailey was going to win. But to have him win, I mean, that's the beauty of the C2 is that they have upsets that you wouldn't expect sometimes. And this is one of them. And yeah, the action, I loved the way Fletcher sold when Bailey did his, it almost looked like a toe, but he kind of did a diving, he dove on the outside and did like a hurricanrana. Loved that move. I was sold that Fletcher was going to win after the flurry that he had. It ended up being a near fall for Bailey. It has to be the biggest win of Bailey's AEW career so far.
Singles, yeah, absolutely. No question. Yeah, I can't think of any bigger win he would have had on singles. He's had a couple close matches, but nothing like this.
And so I'm watching it, I'm like, man, it feels like it's been ages ago since we saw the Kyle Fletcher from United Empire. Like this, I forget about that time of his career.
Yeah, I mean, that's... Yeah, I mean, it's... I don't have, the match was so fast and so back and forth that for me, it's very hard to, for someone who watches wrestling like I do, who doesn't know the names of most of these moves, who's just going, Kyle did a flip. Mike Bailey did another flip. Mike Bailey did a kick. Mike Bailey did, like, it's very hard for me to describe it. As Big G's pointing out, it is the biggest upset in the C2 so far. No one saw this coming. I don't know what they're going to do with Mike. Well, I'm going to ask you, what do you think they do with Mike Bailey from here? Does he get more wins in C2, or is this like a flash in the pan type deal? I mean, I don't think Mike Bailey's positioned well enough that he's not like a scrub, but is this going to propel him even further, or is this, like I said, a flash in the pan for right now?
I would lean more to like this is going to be his big win of the tournament. he might get a draw or some other wins, but this is going to be the signature win for him. And I think his bread and butter right now is with Kevin Knight in the tag team division. I just think it just reminds people and gives some validity to him as a singles wrestler. I'm like, hey, remember, he's still one of the most dangerous and talented singles wrestlers out there too. So they can only propel him back up the card as a singles person later on.
Yeah, that makes sense. But it is the type of match that even if they who knows what plans they have for Mike Bailey pre this match, but this match is going to get such rave reviews that you wonder if they change those plans, because like this is, you know, Big G calling it potential match of the year candidate. Like, people were loving this match, and sometimes that has a big that can change plans for a guy, just especially in AEW where wrestling is so important. I'm wondering if this changes the trajectory of Mike Bailey simply because we're like, whatever we had planned, we can't stick with that now. We have to change it up.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the crowd was really behind him at the end there with all those near falls and then after the win. So yeah, you never know.
Yeah. So amazing match. We are where we are. Hangman has a quick interview where he says he's come back for his title, but that's neither here nor there. Then we have our main event. Eddie Kingston versus Samoa Joe for the AEW World's Championship. Now, I will say, I get why this was the main event, because it's for the championship and it's two legends. Very difficult to follow the match that was before it, which was insane. The nice thing is the style here was so different that it wasn't like they were competing. It would have been bad if they, I mean, obviously these two wouldn't do this because of who they are, but if it had been anyone else, it would have been bad if they came out to try to basically mimic the style they just saw and couldn't perform it at the same level, because it just doesn't look, this was much more of a bruiser match. It wasn't a hoss match. You're not talking a big meaty match. You're talking two bruisers, two fighters, two brawlers. A lot of punches, kicks, but not really kicks, but like shin kicks versus like Mike Bailey does, but a lot of more punches, dirty wrestling, trying to get a submission using the rope, stuff like that. Again, it was kind of predictable at this point what was going to happen. You had Kingston almost get the back fist, but Joe ducked it and got the coquina clutch, in which he won the match. What'd you think?
It was a little bit slower, obviously, based on who's in the ring. And Joe just always kind of had that stalking his prey type of match where he kind of picks and chooses his spots. I thought it'd be obviously it was nice if they kicked Hook out from being ringside to help give Eddie more of a chance in the match. The strikes were great. I love the hand strikes when they were doing those quick little hand strikes. That was always fun to watch. The rest of the match was fine. I guess I'm just kind of looking for something more. I thought maybe even after the loss, I thought we'd get some more like a post-match thing or something like that. But I'm interested in what we can do to follow up with Eddie after this. Now that, you know, he's lost another opportunity where he got a chance to win the title and it hasn't. I thought to myself, like, man, is he going to be like AEW's Charles Barkley, who, you know, has a legendary career, one of the greats, but never wins a championship? I mean, is he going to be that guy for AEW? And what would that do to his mental psyche eventually? So,
yeah. That's a good, what is going to be his, is he going to have a tipping point?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that'll be very interesting. Or will this loss not necessarily not turn him into like a bad guy or anything like that, but just, I don't say infuriate him, but like make him a little bit more vicious than he currently is.
Mm-hmm. And did Samoa Joe do an STF and a salute to John Cena? Would that not to Cena?
That's what everyone online was saying, was that it was a Nazi, probably. And he kind of, I think he saluted.
Yeah, he did a little salute. So I was like, oh, it must be a Cena thing.
I mean, I think it's nice that these guys are saluting. You know, they're like a legend.
Mm-hmm. That's the fun part about wrestling. People can work for different companies and still, you know, it's one community when among the talent.
Yeah. So that was our night. I think you had a lot of talking, but the matches you had were incredible. So I think this was awesome. It was, in my opinion, four out of four.
Oh man, I feel bad saying three and three quarters.
I see you're really more here.
I said 3 3/4, closer to four.
I guess, but you still have that three in your number.
Well, I pinched it off a little bit. You know, I'm not quite peeing myself, but I'm almost there.
Yeah. So, well, you know, I think it was a very good, and I'm processing what you said. It must have stung a little, but that's okay. Or burned. But yeah, very good episode. A lot of talking, but the matches you got were absolute bangers from the start with the women's tag to the main event, which was extremely good. It just, what you had that match the year in between of them that was just like, mm-hmm. How can anyone compete with that?
Next week they were in Wales.
They are. They are abroad.
That should be a hot crowd then, at least.
Yeah. Weird time of year to travel, though.
Mm-hmm.
Weird time of year to travel to Wales, like internationally. And that's not me trashing them. It's just me saying, like, around the holidays with all the travel going on, you think they would have. Before we wrap up, there was something bit of news that we didn't cover that I'm going to quickly address and just get your thoughts on it. It's not directly AEW related, but there is overlap. Mm-hmm. And that is I don't even know if it's the same war because it's more of a bidding war, but the possibility of Netflix buying Warner. However, it would be just buying the streaming side of Warner, not the TV side. A lot of people who want this to be a thing think it's a thing that would hurt AEW. I tend to believe you have a contract that's going to play itself out one way or the other. And I don't see one, if Netflix buys the TV still exists. So AEW is still going to have it. And they likely have a streaming deal that Netflix honors. Two, one thing I never understood, and I get your opinion on this. I know that you don't want to. You're like, well, if we already have, like, if you're Netflix, well, we already have wrestling. Why would we want another competing wrestling? But are you really competing? If you're on a different night, wouldn't you just want it all? Mm-hmm. It's the same reason. Like, my comparison is ESPN would want every single sport if it could afford it. Like,
yeah. Why wouldn't you? I mean, if it's different branding, like, if it's under the same ownership, but at least you have different branding of, like, you know, if it's still CBS. Even though, you know, it's owned by Netflix, like, are you really going to notice that they're owned by the same company, or is it just going to feel the same? I'm more inclined to wonder about, like, what happens with, like, AEW's HBO Max deal and how HBO Max and that streaming part might be affected.
Yeah. And so it's there's not a lot to say because I think almost as soon as the deal was announced, Paramount got involved and said, like, we're going to offer this, and you know, you have this essentially competition for the deal. I think any of my thoughts that I have on it are not wrestling specific. I don't like the idea of companies combining like this. Obviously, I'm the more people out there, the better. But I don't think it has much of an impact, at least initially, on AEW. I think if they're getting good numbers, anyone who buys Warner is going to want them to stay then. It's live programming on a weekly basis. That is, AEW is trying to, Netflix is trying to get more into live programming. You think they would turn down someone who's offering it? Like, I just had to bring it up because it was obviously a big topic of conversation for like a day.
Mm-hmm.
And then like everything else, it dies. So I think we're on the same page that this is, as of right now, doesn't seem to really matter.
Yep.
All right. With that, I'm going to say that's our show. But Joe, when you're not setting up a new office and you've just eaten something wonderful for breakfast, where can you be found talking about it?
Well, sometimes I can be found on my Serial Review blog, which you can find linked in my bio of my social media profiles @_AsianJoe. Other times, sometimes I mention it here on the Mark Warren podcast, which is on the Shining Wizards Network. And sometimes I listen to a lot of their shows.
Well, there you go. When I'm here, most Wednesdays. We're going to try to get more regular. We are part of the Shining Wizards Network. We, a little quick show tonight, no commercials, trying to get back in the groove, had been some time off. But please check out all the Shining Wizard Network shows, including the flagship show, the Shining Wizards. Great friends, great support. Please go check them all out. When I'm not here, you can find me on all our socials at Mark Order Pod, or you can follow my history blog /podcast at Here for History or @_HereForHistory, depending on the platform, Here for History on YouTube or HereForHistory.com. There's not going to be a podcast out this week. As I said earlier on the show, my voice was not around for a while because of a sickness, of a cold. And so I couldn't really record, and I wasn't going to record one with barely able to speak. I'm struggling enough to make them sound half okay that I'm not going to do one where you don't hear me. So, but there will be one out next week. I will say hi, Jesse Ozark, stopping in late, but we are heading out. But thank you for tuning in. And with that, I'm going to put up the outro and hit outro.
This concludes the Mark Order Podcast. We now return you to your regularly